And welcome to the 231st edition of Money Matters. Today's show is entitled Sell in May? Please be advised, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Inc., Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMR, its staff, members, or underwriters, nor this community radio station. If you happen to be hearing this on another station at a different time. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. My name's Mark, the host of your show today. Show is airing May 5th, 2016, 12 p.m. in the year of our Lord. However, you may be hearing the show on another station at a different time. Therefore, you may not be able to call in direct. May not, will not be able to call in. But I always welcome your phone calls. 530-265-9555 is the number to speak to me on air. Well, so let's see. The Dow, 17,622. Down 28.90. We'd mentioned that major Dow numerical levels like 16, 17, 18,000 are major hurdles. We call that resistance as it tries to punch through 18,000, or major support if it tries to fall back down through 18,000. We got up to about 18,000 again. In the last 2 days, last couple of days, last week or so, we've seen about, 380 points plus shaved off the Dow. So, what do you think about that? We headed back down? We headed back up? I don't know. We'll have to see. And so, here you go. We're going to cover, do we sell in May and go away? There's an old adage that says sell in May and go away. And come back November and buy again, historically. There are studies out saying that if you do that, that might have a positive influence on your portfolio, and others say, nah. But historically, you can look that up on Google, what the market does historically between November and May and what it does from May to last of October, and see if that coincides with that saying, sell in May. But for right now, Dow has definitely hit 18,000, is now, at least in the last week or so, headed back down. Can't tell you which way it's going to go from here, but there you go. Gold has backed off a little bit from its recent couple of weeks high, so we'll see what that has to do with anything. And out from the news last week, how many AAA-rated companies are there in the United States? What do you think? Well, now there are only two. Yeah, that's right. Only two AAA-rated companies. That's a surprise. You'd think with all the major companies out there, be a lot of them that were rated AAA, the best. But now there are only two. Standard & Poor's downgraded Exxon from AAA to AA+. That's a step below. Leaving only Johnson & Johnson and Microsoft remaining with the coveted highest rating of AAA. Automatic data processing, ADP, lost its AAA rating earlier. A few weeks back, downgraded to AA, following its decision to spin off its auto dealer's arm. ADP held the AAA rating since the mid-90s, but now, like Exxon, the rating is history. Exxon had its AA rating for 67 years, but like all good things, it came to an end. More than 60 companies held the highest ratings in the 80s. More than 60. Wow. But that number has been dwindling since. In 2008, there were only six AA-rated companies, and now there remains only two. Low oil prices have bludgeoned Exxon profits, along with many other companies in the oil industry. Massive debt loads incurred by many oil producers while oil prices were soaring are now causing stress in the debt markets of the world, as it is estimated that 38% of private company debt is related to the energy markets, whether they make stuff for the energy markets or loan money to the energy markets or actually involved in producing energy. Companies borrowed funds from everywhere to produce oil when higher prices were upwards, and that was profitable to do so for many of these companies. Now that oil prices have hit historic lows, paying off all that debt has been challenging for many of these companies, of course. More than a few energy companies have hit the skids. I heard this morning about 57 have filed bankruptcy, with more to possibly come. Both oil and coal producers are suffering from the rout in energy prices. Remember, when oil goes down, of course, coal would go down in price as well as an alternative energy source. And these rout in energy prices have been caused by a combination of environmental concerns, like fracking, or just carbon burning in general, bad press, oversupply, and falling demand from overseas markets as they wallow in recession. The problem is magnified because as energy prices drop, companies tend to want to produce more to pay the bills in lieu of shutting the doors, which further adds to the supply glut, pushing prices of energies even lower. After all, if you're a company and you're having trouble paying your bills and what you produce is oil, you can either shut your doors or produce more oil. And so a lot of companies are producing more oil in lieu of shutting their doors, and that just adds to a glut of oil, and prices then go down further. Reduced in rating, Standard & Poor's added that Exxon's debt level has more than doubled in recent years due to recent share buybacks, dividend payments, and capital spending in the face of falling profits, which is brought about by the face of falling oil prices. The rating company, S&P, Standard & Poor's, maintained its stable outlook on the energy giant Exxon, however. With only two remaining AAA companies left, you have to wonder what is transpiring in America over the last three decades to cause the vast majority of previously rated companies to fall from grace. Is it environmental, labor, or regulatory costs that are bleeding balance sheets dry? Or is the overall economy suffering from macroeconomic sickness that are slowly pushing companies closer to the abyss? With massive government stimulus in the form of monetary policy and ballooning government deficits adding even more money into the economy, one has to wonder where all that cash is ending up if it's not in the hands of our finest companies. As always, of course, this newscast and this commentary is not a recommendation to buy, to sell, or hold any particular security. Past performance is not a guarantee of future price movements, of course, and always consult with a qualified investment professional before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. Yeah, that's the way it is, of course. And so, you're listening to Money Matters. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me today. Dow off 20 points today. So we'll see if the sell in May holds true. And, of course, maintaining a cash position, certain cash position, a portion of cash position in your portfolio can minimize volatility. And so you might consider that. Of course, everybody knows that, right? Cash doesn't go up or down in stock value anyway. What you buy with it, of course, will be up to debate. But for those that can't stomach movement in stock prices, cash is an alternative, of course. Cash is an investment. I mean, you invest in cash. Doesn't really go anywhere, but it is still an investment, much like investing in a house or a dog or a vegetable garden. It really just depends, right? But cash is an investment, so don't think that cash is not. It is an investment, just an investment that doesn't move with the stock market. Market risk, okay, is a name used in investment planning. I use it in my planning. market risk. And it is a broad term to describe the possibilities of stocks going down, not from individual company news, but because the overall market goes down. Market risk. Your stock drops not because the company said something bad, but because the market went down. Since most stocks move in concert with each other at times of extreme volatility, both up and down, market risk, overall market risk on an individual stock, is thought to be an unavoidable risk if you own a stock. These inherent market risks are subtitled things that, like political risk, government or political events affecting markets, to black swan events, which are unforeseen major occurrences such as 9/11 or tsunamis. And of course, there are other many black swan events that I haven't detailed here. The main point with inherent or unavoidable risk is there's little one can do to prepare for one. How do you prepare for market risk? Well, I guess one way to prepare for market risk is to go to cash, right? Since it's not in, quote, the stock market. Now, not all stocks, move in the exact direction of the overall market. Some do not, and some have a tendency to move in the opposite direction. To illustrate this, we only have to look at certain sectors of stocks during market routes and see if they indeed moved in the same direction as the market or moved in opposite direction or didn't move at all. When a risk-on environment, we call that risk-on, is perceived by investors, it means that they perceive the investing waters are safe and they usually buy stocks. So when you hear the term risk-on, it means people are buying stocks. This risk-on environment is typical when the economic environment is perceived as normal and healthy. And investor concerns about the world around them are placid and calm. Everything's cool. Economies are humming. It's a risk-on environment. We'll buy some stocks. Contrary to that, a risk-off environment is when investors are nervous about what is happening around them. For instance, around 9/11 was very nerve-wracking. And of course, the markets reflected that. During risk-off periods, investors tend to flee most stock sectors, most normal stock sectors, and buy assets considered defensive or perceived as safer than the general stock market. These areas might include bonds or preferred stocks, which we typically call fixed income investments, utility sectors, foodstuffs and staple sectors, government investments such as T-bills, government bonds or treasuries or other government-issued debt, Ginnie Mae funds, which are government mortgage-backed securities guaranteed by the U.S. government, and other particular investments thought to be more stable, may not reflect market direction. They may just sit there. True to form, many of these sectors I just mentioned rose or remained stable during the last January brutal sell-off. Although there are investments that are actually designed to rise in market sell-offs, these are called contrary funds sometimes, or bear funds or short funds. These funds are designed to rise if the markets fall. They can, however, be regarded as a risk type of investment, as they may fall if the market value rises. So some funds are actually designed to go in opposite direction of the market. So they may not be stable, let's say like a T-bill, but if the market falls, these are designed to go up. But of course, there's risk there. Because if the market runs, then of course these funds would fall. A diversified portfolio may hold both risk-on and risk-off types of investments. That way, you would participate in rising markets with the risk-on investments, and yet offer some degree of safety in falling markets. That would be the risk-off investments. A dynamic strategy, a moving strategy, which attempts to move in and out of assets depending on market corrections, is actually called timing. Okay, so a dynamic strategy or a timing strategy would be like, well, I think the market's going to go up, so I'm going to buy stocks, or I think the market's going to go down, so I think I'm going to buy some of these other risk-off assets. But timing, of course, is difficult. Many investors try to time market movements only to be burned when markets move in the opposite direction of what they expected. The bottom line here is to ensure your portfolio is diversified and not subject to entirely market risk. You might want to research what investments and assets tend to rise during market upsets. You could just do that by, you know, looking up the past outperformance and see what these previously mentioned assets did when the markets fell. And some sectors just did what the market did, and some didn't go anywhere. Although past performance is never guaranteed as to future movements, of course, certain actions and reactions in markets tend to repeat themselves when we observe them over a larger time period. And history can at least be a guide as to where to look for risk-on and risk-off areas to park your money. And, of course, the same remains true about consulting a qualified investment professional before you consider anything. You're listening to Money Matters. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me. We'll be right back after this brief musical interlude.
store. Money for nothing, get your chicks for free. We got to install a microwave oven, custom kitchen deliveries. We got to move these refrigerators.
And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. So, Trump looks like the GOP nomination. What do you think of that? That's something I didn't see coming. Holy mackerel. Well, of course, there are supporters for both sides of the aisle. And I don't do politics on this show. However, I did run across something that was tied to business from Uncommon Wisdom Daily. Now, those of you that are leaning to the left side of the aisle, you might not like this article a little bit, but I read both sides, you know. I just kind of snookered when I said Trump was going to be your GOP candidate. But here's the, I thought this was an interesting take from Uncommon Wisdom Daily from Martin Weiss, the afternoon edition. This was put out on Thursday, April 14th. And it's entitled Bernie's Very Dangerous Rhetoric. Let me read this to you. I thought it was interesting. Dear Mark, from Martin Weiss. The presidential election year is replete with some of the silliest, most vapid. Is that vapid or vapid? And just downright dumb political rhetoric that I've ever heard. Yet one statement yesterday from Senator Bernie Sanders really stands out in my mind as the worst line in the campaign. Sanders had been campaigning in New York a few weeks back in front of Tuesday's key primary. Now, this article was written April 14th. Yesterday, he made an appearance at a worker protest held by Verizon employees. The protest came as some 36,000 Verizon workers walked off the job Wednesday. They were protesting the lack of a new union contract and the loss of jobs via outsourcing. Martin goes on to say, look, embracing striking workers is a good strategy for someone who thinks corporations are sticking it to their workers. After all, grievance-infused workers have become a key driving force in this election on both sides of the aisle. The unlikely rise to the front-runner status of businessman Donald Trump is proof. Those who have become so unsatisfied with the country are willing to follow his big voice promising to make America great again, even if the specifics behind that statement are less than detailed. So what did Sanders say that got my head scratching? So says Martin Weiss. Speaking to the crowd of protesters, Bernie offered up the following assessment of what he thinks is the motivation behind Verizon's management actions. Quote, this is just another major American corporation trying to destroy the lives of working Americans. Bernie Sanders, unquote. Martin goes, what? Now that really surprises me. But here is all the evidence you need that many citizens have no idea how business leaders actually think. Moreover, it's all the evidence you need to show that the virtue, that freedom and prosperity that only capitalism can bring is in jeopardy, so says Martin Weiss. Based on Sanders' statement, we can infer that the senator actually thinks that Verizon's CEO, CFO, board of directors, senior management, and senior shareholders get up in the morning and think of ways to destroy American lives. Of course, the truth is that Verizon's management team wakes up every morning and goes about the business of trying to create shareholder wealth. This means figuring out ways to maximize quarterly profits. That means generating as much revenue as possible for as little cost as possible. This is not a corporation trying to destroy lives, says Martin Weiss. It's a group of people trying to create value and in turn create wealth. The point that Sanders seems to miss is that a corporation doesn't exist to destroy lives or even to create better lives for its workers. Yes, Verizon does provide livelihoods to hundreds of thousands of workers and for millions of people, both directly and indirectly. Yet that is not why the company exists. The company exists to sell products and services to people willing to pay for those products and services. Think about this. If Verizon or any other corporation was really out to destroy American lives, who would they sell their products to? The answer is nobody. They would crumble and cease to exist. Martin Weiss goes on to ask the question and to comment. The reason why the Sanders comment is so destructive has less to do with the merit of the idea anchoring it and more to do with how many young voters seem to have embraced this idea. Perhaps the biggest surprise of this presidential primary is that so many Democratic voters under age 18 to 34 are Sanders supporters. Some say the reason is his authenticity or avuncular manner. Avuncular? Boy, my English is terrible. Or even his framing issues in moral terms rather than simply political terms. Whatever the reason, it's clear that the millennial set also has accepted the view that companies seeking profits, making choices about containing costs, outsourcing, and the size of the workforce somehow equates with a plot to destroy the country. These are the concepts that could not only lead to democratic socialism, but also to real hardcore socialism, and eventually full-blown tyranny. Martin asks, what do you think about Senator Sanders' comments? Am I making too much of what seems to be behind it? Or am I not sounding enough of a warning? He goes on to comment on the markets and such, but it is interesting. He makes some points here. What do you think of that? And on the news front, stocks skidded lower last week. Bank of America and Wells Fargo said they saw profits decline in the recently ended quarter. They had to earmark more cash to cover bad energy loans. Huh? What did I tell you about that? And deal with low interest rates. A trend that should only continue. So says Martin Weiss. And now the Fed and the FDIC want them to refile their living wills. And how would they unwind in a crisis? Those are those stress tests we were talking about. Delta Airlines was the first of the friendly skies to report earnings. The airline said profits soared 27% in the first quarter after spending a third less on fuel than it did the year earlier. And Microsoft wants to tell customers when a federal agency wants to look at their emails and other documents stored on remote servers. Lawsuit filed in Seattle. Company is asking the government for a right to notify individuals and businesses about these requests. And he says, are you sickened over the nanny state? We're talking about the government, the people who run it, the people who want to let you them run it, and over the sound dollar campaign that he has. Anyway, that's from Martin Weiss, published by Brad Hopman, Uncommon Wisdom Daily. You're listening to Money Matters on a community radio station. We'll be right back with a little bit more market news.
Lots of candy off my mouth. Maybe
And 1980s band Warrant. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and this is your host, Mark Cunaberti. Thanks for joining me today. So the show is number 231, Sell in May, question mark? Well, that could be a very good question. Let's check the Dow as we were down 20 or 30. And today, oh, I see. I didn't do that right. Well, we'll see. In any case, so there are questions in investors' mind. Do we sell in May? Do we go away till August? What do we do? Oh, I see Mother's Day coming up. Okay. How about that? So in any case, I guess the big question in everybody's mind is, will the Federal Reserve continue to raise rates at their next meeting or stand pat in the face of the latest economic statistics? Well, they held pat again. So they had one rate increase, I think, in December, set the markets in a tailspin, and now the last two times they've held pat. In the next coming up meeting here, will they raise rates again? Or will the newly announced negative interest rates, where banks actually charge depositors to hold their money, be implemented? It is indeed a strange world where we live in, where the direction of interest rates and what the feds do runs the gamut from both north and south poles. In other words, first they talked about raising rates. Now they're talking about going to negative interest rates. Those are two opposite directive statements. The markets, at least until up till last week, appeared to like what the feds were doing as far as holding rates. The Dow pressed upwards, close to the 18,000 level, an area where it has not risen for a while and has never gotten out of the 18,000s into the 19,000s. The average Joe, however, the working Joe, at least on the surface, appears to be treading water. I get this personal impression, not from some economic statistic, but just on the recent experiences I had. And I have. I'm talking to people. We appear to be in some sort of motionless state of monetary limbo. Not getting ahead, yet still managing to hold on to a job, at least most of us anyway. Commodities, the price of many of the basic materials and foodstuffs, have been rising a little bit, as indicated by the Commodities Index, which tracks such things. It's up over just about 10% since January. This increase in commodity prices could mean inflation is starting to ignite. Inflation, prices increasing. And, of course, inflation could spell pain for the pocketbooks of an American workforce, with the majority of them are having at least some difficulty making ends meet. This constant struggle to pay household bills could be at least part of the reason Democratic moderate, some say socialist, Bernie Sanders is so popular. People are just tired of having a select few reaping the rewards and riding in the cart of the greatest country on earth, while the working majority seem to do most of the pulling. After half a decade of trillions in stimulus and bailouts from the feds and indeed global central banks everywhere to try and foster a worldwide economic recovery, the most obvious effects, besides stemming the economic tsunami that was 2008, is the stock market's seemingly relentless push from around 6,500 on the Dow in 2009 to nearly triple where we sit close to today. Triple. Noticeably absent from the six-year rally are banking stocks and energy stocks, especially energy stocks lately. With the unprecedented amounts of Fed money going into the banking sector, that's from the Federal Reserve release of information in Bloomberg 2011 lawsuit and Freedom of Information Act, banking stocks are off their lows hit during the depth of the crisis, but they are nowhere near their previous highs before the crisis. Energy stocks did recover with the overall market in 2010, but the recent bloodbath in oil prices have hammered these stocks mercilessly, as you well know. With concerns regarding economic slowdowns in many areas of the world, and even more talk of easy monetary policies from the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan, among others. And with close to one quarter of the world's sovereign debt, which is government debt of major countries, now yielding negative rates. That's right. One quarter of the world's sovereign debt is now in a negative interest rate environment. In other words, when you loan them money, they give you less back. An argument could be made the world is not out of the woods yet, which we were cast into by the severe crisis of 2008 and 2009. In the face of a rising stock market, the world still has not fully recovered. Now, in the face of this rising market, and lately falling, more talk of monetary accommodation, which is low interest rates and more quantitative easing. Struggling energy and banking sectors and economic stagnation or outright recession is occurring in many areas of the globe. And there are indeed, of course, many economic currents and cross currents that are pulling us to and fro. The conflicting economic data that continues to pour in and how the world's central banks react to that data is making for one difficult market for us investors and us advisors. And predicting what the central banks will do is next to anyone's guess. I sometimes doubt that central bankers even know themselves what to do. You're listening to show 231, Money Matters, on your community radio station. And speaking of commodities, are commodities finally on the rise? Well, yeah, we talked about that a little bit earlier. You kind of have to wonder, what do you see in the grocery stores around you? Are you seeing commodity prices rise? It's kind of interesting, you know, one of the major commodities in the world is oil, and the oil was really bludgeoned. But it has come back a little bit. I think I paid $2.97 this morning for premium. My car takes premium. And I'm kind of checking out meat prices. Meat prices, at least to me, have seemed to come down a little bit. Not a tremendous amount, but they seem to have come back a little bit. And, you know, we are seeing, I know that the price of my health care premiums are going up. They went up quite substantially last couple of weeks. I got my renewal. And holy macro. I don't know. I want to pay for a family of five. I don't know. $23,000 I pay in medical insurance. And I have a high deductible to boot. And so we're seeing that go up. College tuitions are going up. You know, it seems like any time that the government gets into certain areas and they start flooding it with either government loans or subsidies, we start to see prices go up. And that kind of makes sense. Anytime you plow money into a certain environment, you're going to see prices rise. I always use the analogy, if I was selling a Rolex watch in a room full of people, that everybody had $10,000. Well, the highest bid on the Rolex watch, if only everybody only had $10,000, would be $10,000. But let's say it was a very expensive, sought-after watch. And somebody came in the room and gave everybody in the room another $10,000. So you doubled the money supply in the room. I would imagine that the top bid for the Rolex watch at $10,000 would then be bid higher because there was more money in the room. And that's kind of like what happens when the government either subsidizes or makes a lot of loans available to a certain sector. For instance, the government gets into loaning a lot of money or giving student loans out, there's more money in the room. And so the price of the education, or what we call tuition, goes up. And that seems to hold true. Like when the government went in into the housing sectors and loaned money on housing and dropped interest rates to zero, more people could get a loan. So more money was introduced into the system. And then when that happens, of course, housing prices started to skyrocket. So we saw that as well. When we got into medical insurance, where we had to, everybody buys insurance for medical insurance, then we saw the price of healthcare start to skyrocket. And when they started to enact Obamacare, of course, we saw a continuation of healthcare prices. And I always use the analogy, suppose the government made food insurance. So you bought insurance, and then you could go to the grocery store and buy whatever food you wanted. Well, first of all, if the grocery store knew that you basically could buy any food without asking the price, because remember, in the medical field, we never ask how much things are anymore. You never ask how much is an MRI. You just go do it because the insurance is going to pay for it. So imagine we had food insurance and you went into the supermarket and there were no prices because you didn't need prices because the insurance is going to pay for it, much like medical insurance. So everybody would start to go in, and immediately upon starting that food insurance program, people would start buying all sorts of food. They'd buy the best of steaks and they'd buy all this expensive stuff because they're not paying for it anymore. So if you're not asking prices, the grocery stores would say, well, look, they're not asking prices anymore. They don't care. So we can raise the prices for more profit. And since medical companies know that you don't ask anymore, they do. And they have raised the prices. Just look at the price of your medical insurance year after year after year. Well, what happens is as soon as you instigated food insurance, the demand for food would go up because people would start buying more and more of it. And the demand for food would go up in nominal dollars because the prices would rise. Well, the food demand would go off the charts. People would be buying the best food because they don't care about prices. Pretty soon, the insurance companies would start to see their profits arose as more and more people bought food, and they would raise the premiums. And when they raise the premiums, then like they do in healthcare, they raise the premiums, you end up paying more, and the cycle continues. You buy more and more food, and the more and more people you make the food insurance available to, then the higher prices would go for the food. One, demand would skyrocket, which boosts prices because more and more people would buy food. Demand would skyrocket. And the grocery stores would no longer post prices and raise prices because you're not asking. So we see that same sort of thing in healthcare insurance. And when they make money available for housing, lower interest rates, we saw that in housing. So one could make the argument that wherever the government gets involved in subsidizing something or makes money available to borrow at a low interest rate, we see the price of whatever the industry or the asset that they're in go up in price. And this idea of food insurance is really a great example of what would happen. And so the more we see the government get into things, the higher prices go. Now, it would be nice to get food insurance because nobody would go hungry. And I haven't seen anybody actually propose that idea. But, you know, it might be something that somebody would say, hey, you know, maybe that's a good idea. We have seen a few countries instigate a minimum wage, whether you're working or not. They basically call it a minimum income. In other words, every person in the nation gets a certain amount of money. Everybody gets $22,000. I think Sweden or Switzerland, one of those countries did it. And, you know, how do you feel about that? It's called a minimum income. Everybody gets it. So that would mean that if you got $20,000 minimum income, that any job that paid less than $20,000, you would not go to work at. Because if you worked and made $15,000, the government would only give you $5,000 because the minimum income is $20,000. So that's the argument against these, you know, ideas for a minimum income. We've only seen a couple of countries do it, instigate a minimum income. But, you know, the example is that when the government gets into something or makes interest rates really low so you can borrow money or subsidize, we see the prices go up. And I myself particularly believe that the reason why we're seeing healthcare go up, and we saw housing go up, and we saw educational expenses go up, because the government gets into it and plows and makes available billions and billions of dollars. And then you just draw back to the food insurance programs and what the grocery stores would do, and there you would be. And so it's kind of an interesting take on supplements and subsidies. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station, and we're running out of time. So I have to conclude the show. This has been show number 231. Sell in May. The market today, let's see if I get anything on the market here. What is it doing? We're getting close to close on Thursday. You may be listening to the show at a different time. Welcome. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Questions or comments about the show can be sent to the program director at your station, and they will forward it on to me. Now, you have to keep in mind, as always, that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on this show are my opinions only and those of the guests and the articles I read. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Again, feel free to send an email, comment to the show, to the program director, whatever station you're listening to the show on. My name is Mark Cuniberti. I want to wish you a great day. God bless you, and stay tuned for more fine programming from your community radio station. Ciao. It's a hit. A dog.